look, it's Monday morning, time for Troops, little bring it in Zoom from quarantine show. David Thorpe, happy Mother's Day to you.
And to our moms, yes, it was, as I said to you in the document, we have him here on this planet. We're lucky for that, right?
Yeah. Yours is local too, right? I mean, you...
Both my mother-in-law, who's, I've been with her 34 years now. So yeah. She lives 3 minutes away. My mom lives 5-6 minutes away. We saw them both. And yeah, very fortunate. Plus my sister-in-law and my mom, I mean, my wife. So yeah, banner Mother's Day. You have a good one too?
Yeah. No, it's just another reason to overeat. There's always a good reason to just chow down. Like that's the, yeah, it was great. It was great. We, you know, drove around and ate in different places, not just here. Actually, to be totally honest, the Abbotts had our first, like, we haven't really dined out anywhere, but we sat outside at a beautiful place and had a lovely two moms there. It's fun.
What's the weather like there?
Not great. It was a little borderline for that. Today's cold.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty cold. It's going to be like 60 later, but it's, I don't know.
Wow, that's why you're in your awesome sweatshirt.
This is why I'm wearing the sweatshirt. Yeah, it's necessary to wear the Adina sweatshirt. Okay, we have way too much to talk about today.
Yeah, let's go.
Including Shams has reported this interesting schedule thing. I've not seen it before in NBA history, but they're going to basically play all of the game. Reportedly, you're going to play all of the final day of the season games, all 30 teams, all at the same time.
That sounds like the English Premier League.
Yeah.
That's what they do in the Premier League. Yeah. The last game of every regular season is all the same kickoff. Obviously, a little different because of time zones.
And the reason, I guess, is because if they have a sequence, then the results of the early games will have a big effect on the later games. For instance, if you know the way your seating is assured, then you'll just sit all your players for the later games.
Right.
So by having them all play at the same time, nobody knows what's going to happen. The idea is everyone will have to play. I like it because I actually think it's good sports programming to have way more than you can track. It creates a frenzy of like, what the hell's happening with this game and that game? And it makes fans a little anxious, which I think is like the NCAA tournament, right? It's fun. Like you're overwhelmed.
We're all trying to live lives too. So not having to watch, if you really are a big fan, 8 hours of basketball, probably better, you know, to do 3 hours, 4 hours, right?
Yeah, we're usually on this, like the national TV's program as if everybody wants to see every second and like you just watch one and the next, but like, no, just fire all the guns. There's 30 teams. We're never going to watch them all, right? Like you got to just like, I don't know.
For sure.
Okay, David, you saw some Anthony Davis over the weekend and you think it's a big deal.
Yeah, so Judy, before you play those clips, so first of all, when he is able to score in ISO, right? So you don't deny him the ball. He gets the ball somewhere on the court and can just get buckets. That's prime Anthony Davis, right? So now what do you do? Well, one thing you can do is deny him and try to move him into more comfortable spots. And so, Judy, I've got two different clips up there where I'm not really clear what the Suns are doing. In one case, they were doubling. See, right here, if you're watching a video, they're playing zone. So if you look at Drummond, fills the high post, immediately goes to the lob for Davis. That's a read where he's being fronted. And then by going high, low, you kill the front. Now they don't defend it very well either, but it's pretty hard to defend when he jumps to 13 feet and dunks the ball. And Drummond makes a great pass from the elbow. So now when you watch the second one, you'll see a similar situation. It's late in the game, so the game's over, but Caruso goes to the high post, immediately throws that lob. That's a read the Lakers have made where when you fill the middle, right, which you're going to see when there's double teams, which the beginning of that play, there was a double team because the Suns are down 10 the last minute. The game's over. And so then you're kind of zoning out of it, fill the middle, and then look to the rim. That is an important little wrinkle for the Lakers offense to use if they're fully healthy and teams are scrambling to defend different ways. It's just a rule. When we're spread on the perimeter, someone gets the middle and then immediately look for Davis at the rim or even Drummond if he's there. That doesn't matter so much if Davis can't just score against everyone. And the last couple of games, I didn't see the Portland game. You did. Mm-hmm. He's scored a bunch of points. So if we were going to wave a magic wand and say, okay, the Lakers won a championship again, well, then you if you look backwards, you'd realize, well, what's happened is LeBron returned and to be LeBron, shockingly. But AD became the AD of last year, which we've not seen all season. right?
Yeah.
That has to happen or they got no shot. So if you're a Laker fan, you're starting to think, yeah, we got a shot, right? I'm doing my best to rob there. Yeah, well, they got at least a shot if that's the AD, because he wasn't just good in the fundamental system aspect of their offense. He was just one-on-one. I mean, it was a highlight reel. He was the best player over the weekend, probably. He was amazing.
It's a strange little bright spot for them of LeBron being out is, you know, they put the weight of the world on, like, returning from injury Anthony Davis, and it didn't work for several games, but then eventually it did. Suddenly he's hitting contested threes and looking super agile. And
they play defense. They play defense, right? It's in their DNA. They're going to guard you. They're going to be super smart about their reads, right? And their system in place defensively, their strategies. But what does it matter if AD isn't last year's AD and LeBron isn't this year's LeBron when he was healthy? We don't know what's going to happen. And we don't know if AD can keep this up. We'll see. You and I are long past the point of just thinking things are scripted. Brand names don't mean anything, nor does the name of the back of your jersey is how you play. And all that name in the back suggests is we know you're capable of doing this. How long can he do it? We don't know. But back-to-back amazing games, not good games, amazing games, is a good sign. You know, it's a good sign. I'm hoping for it. I want all these guys to play great. The Western playoffs have a chance to be incredible if everyone was healthy and playing great. There's a lot of great teams.
Oh, it's dizzying. Well, and we'll get into that a little bit. Actually, let's skip right to the next point here is you pointed out the teams with the best records against the West are, in order, the Suns at 27-11, the Clippers at 27-13, and then the Jazz at 26-12. I guess we could debate the order of those. But it's not just the Jazz. The Jazz have the best record in the NBA, but the Suns and Clippers have been just as good against the West, which is
noting. To me, Henry, I don't know. I mean, I think net margin is the most important thing. Statistics have proven that. And the Jazz destroyed that, right? They are by far the best net margin team. But in these kinds of games, you know, finding ways to win is sometimes even more relevant than just staying competitive, which is why those margins are so important. The Suns and Clippers are right there, right? The Clippers are not playing great right now. Neither are the Suns. So this is something we'll follow. That those two teams aren't doing as well late season. Over the course of the whole season, they have been. You mentioned, and you can talk about, I want you to talk about what Justin has taught you years ago about overall balance. You'll talk about it. I've always done pretty good in those stat geek things too, without having any math degrees. I didn't really love the idea of just individual matchups. I know that's always the narrative. I've always looked at just how you're playing. And then you start figuring out from there, how are you playing going into this series? And then what does that series do to elevate if you win? I've always been a big believer in what just happened can really prepare you going forward. We've written about this at True Hoop. So the Suns and the Clippers not doing great now is worrisome, especially when we talk about later what some of these bottom seeding teams are doing right now. There's going to be some upsets. We don't normally see as many upsets as I think we might see this year. That's why I think
these like bottom seeded Warriors and Lakers, the teams like that.
Yeah, or Wizards. Like, do you think the Sixers want to play against Washington Wizards right now? I don't. Even though Philly's doing their 8-game win streak is the best in the league right now. But I don't think they want to play the Wizards right now. I tell you that. They're playing great on both sides of the ball.
Right. Let me talk. You mentioned this. So Justin Kobako was the founder of Basketball Reference, StatGeek, who has StatGeek of StatGeeks. He won every single True Hoop StatGeek SmackDown he ever entered. He does just a brilliant. He's a guy who has a way of making things simple, which is a real quality.
That's most brilliant guys do.
Justin did a lot of work on basically like how do you predict who's going to win the championship based on the regular season, and you know, Hollinger, a million people have written about different examinations of this, but basically, there are a lot of factors that go into it. Record isn't very useful. Mostly it's, you want to use that margin of victory. You might adjust for quality of opponent and this kind of stuff, but very seldom do we have such a clear like margin of victory favorite like this year's Jazz. And when we do have a favorite like that, they usually win the championship. They happen to also be very balanced offense and defense, the Jazz are. Justin says to me that basically this was years ago, maybe it's a little different now, but basically like that doesn't matter that much. Just the margin is good enough as long as you're not terrible at either end. This is where the Nets kind of are caught in that a little bit. They are terrible at one end.
Yeah.
But
that's why it's so relevant. What you just said, that's why it's so relevant, is the Sixers are just okay on offense. The Nets are terrible on defense.
Right.
That matters. Right. To Justin, who's smarter than I am, that matters.
Yeah. So it doesn't mean the Jazz are going to win, but the Sixers are in a pack with a lot of teams. The Jazz aren't. The pack wins sometimes, but it's not likely.
Well, typically when the pack has won, it's been because of injuries to the leader.
Yeah.
Right? When the Warriors who have been the top didn't win, there was the Cleveland comeback and then the meltdown in Toronto where just everyone but Steph was hurt, you know? Really hurt, like out hurt or beat up like Looney. So yeah, the Jazz, we'll talk about the Jazz, I'm sure, more next week.
We're about to have a whole bunch of resting, right? Actually, let's roll right into the next topic. So already out injured, but we don't know. This time of year, you don't know if they're really injured or not in many cases. Bradley Beal, Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, LeBron James, Zion Williamson, Jaylen Brown, Robert Williams, Dennis Schroeder, Eric Paschal, James Wiseman, Klay Thompson, Jamal Murray, Monte Morris, Kristaps Porzingis, Maxi Kleber, Devonte Graham, Gordon Hayward, James Harden. There are tons more. And I think we're about to get an epidemic of this because, I just did a pretty geeky thing. I don't know why I spent so long on this, but here's the deal. Like, if you look at the standings, East and West, it's pretty close. There are lots to play for, East and West. But if you look at the 538 kind of simple cut of like projected finish, the West is actually not that close. The Jazz are projected to finish 2 games ahead of the Suns, 3 games ahead of the Clippers, who are 2 games ahead of the Nuggets, who would be 3 games ahead of the Mavericks. Like that's with 5 games left, that's not that close, right? If you're the Nuggets trying to pass the Clippers, you're 2 games behind with 5 games to play. Like you might just want to start resting people, right? And there are several Nuggets out, right? The Blazers and Lakers are projected to finish tied in one. There's the two different, there's the player forecast, Raptor, and then there's the ELO one. They're projected to finish tied in the Raptor metric, or the Lakers 1 game behind in the ELO one. So that's a live fight, right? The 6-7 thing and the stakes matter. Grizzlies and Warriors projected to finish tied, and they're about to play each other, which is maybe the most exciting game left on the Western Conference schedule. The Spurs are projected to finish nowhere near the Warriors or the trailing Pelicans. Like, I think the Spurs might just start resting people too, right? And maybe already are. If you look through the rest of the schedule, it's Blazer, Laker, Grizzly, Warrior games that are the ones that are really, you know, everybody's all in. I think we're about to see like lots more people sitting. Then in the East, it's a little different. So in the East, the 76ers are going to win the East, right? And then Nets and Bucks, that's projected to finish a game ahead. Here's where it gets interesting, is the Hawks, Knicks, and Heat are all within a game, 4, 5, and 6. Celtics, this is super interesting to me. The Celtics are alone. They're going to finish 7th. Like, it's very unlikely now that they lost that game to the Heat. 2 games behind the Heat, 3 games ahead of the Wizards, Hornets. I think the Celtics, it makes a lot of sense. Jaylen Brown's all beat up. Jason Tatum's been beat up. Like, I really think we might see the Celtics mailing it in a little bit this week. Not to say you're going to lose, but you're just not going to play Jason Tatum long minutes, right? Wizards and Hornets projected to finish tied between 8 and 9. So that's big. And the Pacers are right there behind them, a game behind. I count with this little thing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 total games the remaining this year where I'm sure both teams are going to be all in. That's it.
I like everything that you did. Knowing coaches the way I do and knowing players the way I do, I think we're going to find it's going to be a little bit of a combination of what you describe, in that they're going to be all in at first in a game, but they might be quick to press the abort button, right? If things just aren't going great. The Jazz already did this in one game. They were getting smacked by Phoenix, but the game wasn't over. It was, there was, you know, 25 minutes left or whatever. And already you could see Quinn Snyder, because I'm really studying them. I don't know them as well as these other teams. It was like, all right, we're not going to win this game. Let's try other rotations, right? Yeah. Let's rest some guys. Mitchell and Conley are already out. So I think you're going to start seeing that with the teams you've highlighted already. They may go into a game if indeed there's any benefit to winning. And let's start with this, as I said before. As a coach, you want to feel like we can get to – I always talk about the elasticity of a team. So as a coach, you want to feel like, okay, we can stretch to that for a regular season game anyway. And once you know you can get there, like I don't think Boston knows they can get there. So now you have to measure it with what you point out. They're already beat up. Jaylen Brown didn't play yesterday with, I think it's an ankle injury. So, okay, are we better off seeing if we can't find that level and then take it down a notch, or just hope for the best in the postseason and not even try now? There is no necessarily right answer. There's a lot of variables going on. But I know this, the feeling of a coach when you're in the playoffs, you're down 2-1, 3-1, 3-2, and you know you've never seen your team play its best, or at least not in months, is a very frustrating feeling. You feel like you failed.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You want to at least taste it. If they beat you, they beat you. But at least, man, we've never played this good. And we lost. Like, I feel like there's some teams that are still going to try to find it. I also think that some coaches are just wrong. They aren't listening to what you're saying. And they're just going to treat every game like it's the regular game. And they're going to lose in the playoffs because they didn't get the rest that I think those guys need. I think I'm a big believer in the rest part.
I mean, I hate that we have to debate this at all. Right. In football, you just play your brains out every weekend and that's it. But now it's like, okay, if you have, like, let's say you're playing the Rockets and the Suns, and Tuesday, Thursday, hypothetical, like, if you go all in against both, like, you're probably going to win one, right? If you go all in only against the Rockets, you're definitely going to win one, right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think you bring up a point. Well, you bring up a point that I think is really interesting. I watched Houston play two games this weekend. Yeah, that's how crazy I am. Right? Why would anyone want to watch the team? Although the OKC is unwatchable right now. Houston's
like,
not unwatchable.
That injury report we had going on earlier, it's like all the Rockets, all the Thunder.
Yeah. The difference is Houston's very entertaining.
Yeah.
They are competing their ass off. They really are. And they're hard to guard. You're just not going to have a hard time scoring. They don't at all think about defense. Because in their mind, these guys are all playing for jobs and contracts, and they're probably right to think people, we'll see this offseason if guys playing good defense get paid. Normally, it's just the offense players get paid. That's how the Rockets are playing anyway. So you might beat Houston to go all in. And I wanted to find all in too. This is, to me, the most interesting point. What's all in? All in is you play the game to win as if the game matters. You're playing your guys the typical minutes they play. You're running your best stuff for that game. I think it's the hybrid like I talked about. You're going to see lesser minutes for these guys. And I get that. Like, players aren't always right. Aren't always wrong when they feel like, you know what? I'd rather give me 20 minutes. Give me 25 minutes. I don't want to. They feel like they lose everything when they just don't play. That's how a lot of players feel. Not every player feels this way. And yeah, you're taking a risk of playing them at all, but you're also taking a risk of having them play badly in the postseason if they feel like they've just been out for a while, because there is going to be a nice break for, what, 12 teams, right? A good break for 12 teams.
Yeah, but that, like, you know, the science doesn't really support this, right? Like, the idea is that,
I agree with you.
Like, those players have less stuff who are all beat up, right? Like, all these hamstring, Bradley Beal's a hamstring. James Harden's a hamstring, right? Like,
Mike Conley hamstring,
right? This is not the way to be at your best, right? And I guess players feel like they're not at their best if they get 2-3 days off when the rest of their team is getting one day off, right? But that's in their head, right? Like, I mean, it matters in their head, but come on, everybody's fine with 2-3 days off. Like, what the fuck? No one's ever been ruined by 2-3 days off. It happens all the time. Right. The only thing is the not doing everything you can feels weird to people with OCD. That's a different thing. Right. Like,
which a lot of guys have.
Yeah. That's
and they get,
yeah.
And they get a good, they're going to get time off where they'll have good practices if they're healthy.
Yeah.
They can have good practices. You can really practice.
If you want to play, if you play 2-3 times a week, all in, I think you're like prepping your brain and your body better to be your best 10 days from now than if you play 4 times a week. Right.
I agree. We are in agreement. And, you know, I tweeted over the weekend about how I thought Dennis Lindsay deserved Executive of the Year. And what you're describing here is kind of my argument. There are so many things to manage. A coach deserves a lot of credit for a lot of things, but the executives are not just in charge of transactions, right? They are the edict from the top, and dealing with those egos and end of year contract situations and bonuses. There's lots of different variables involved, and also just selling the message. It can't just be the head coach. So to your point on this whole idea, the better franchises will manage this last week better.
Yeah.
And we'll likely see the result of that when we get to the playoffs.
And, you know, the ones who don't handle, like, we'll see some beat up, tired,
absolutely,
players in the first round, right?
And
like,
not in game one, because they have a week off, right. But it'll be game two. And all of a sudden, it'll be like they didn't get a break at all. That's what it feels like.
Right.
When you have a week off, you feel great that first game. And then that one game back where you're not really rested, you're back to being exhausted again. Yeah, you're going to, I haven't looked at it. The West is so competitive, but my inclination normally would be there's going to be a lot of 4 and 5 game series. But because these teams are so close, I don't think we're going to have that. And so that's why I say the teams that are handling rest better and this end of season week better. It's also interesting too, Henry, like you don't even know if you want the 1 seed for one reason, or 2 seed over 3 for home court advantage, in that, you know, 1 wants it versus 2, 2 wants it versus 3, right? In that second round. It's just, there's no easy seeding to focus on.
Yeah.
You've got the chance to play LeBron or Curry in the first round, and that's a reward for being a 1 or 2 seed. That is something we've seen too often.
Yeah, we were talking a lot about this. Like, if you're the Jazz and the Suns, who are, you know, what are they, game apart today?
Two games, 1.5 games now.
1.5. But to me, I'm like, if I'm the Jazz, I just want, you know, there's a little game to try to play of like, oh, who's going to come out of the tournament and which slot and, you know, who you're going to get. And like, I just feel like you're never going to know. Like, if you played some game to line yourself up with this or that opponent, like, you won't get that opponent. The odds are terrible. But to me, I'm like, if I'm the Jazz, win just so you have home court against the Suns, right? Like, that's... Yeah. That's what they say. That's what you.
Right. Yeah. The Jazz are 2 games up in Phoenix. They play in Golden State tonight without Conley or Mitchell. It's 1.5 games if they lose, of course. Tomorrow night, the Warriors play their back-to-back against the Suns. The Suns win that game because they're resting tonight. And now it's a 1-game difference, and the Suns have a tiebreaker. So we really could be – we could very well be a situation where the last game that you were just talking about, the Suns are 1 back of Jazz. If the Jazz don't win and the Suns win – the Suns are the 1 seed. If the Jazz are even 1.5 games up going to that last game, it's over, right? So I think the Jazz magic number is 3. 3 wins or any combination of 3 wins and Suns losses, and they've secured the 1 seed. Whereas the Sixers, more or less, they're up 3 now. They're going to get the 1 seed.
I think if you had, you know, most of these teams have sports scientists and they know everybody's blood values and, like, you know, and they know that players right now are just wrecked, right? This is as tired as NBA players have ever been going to the playoffs. Like, I think if I were the Suns, who are projected to finish 3 games ahead of the Clippers, I would just concede the number 1 seed right now, and I would go in as the most rested team in the West and destroy everybody.
I don't think it's a bad idea at all. Play your young guys. You might still win. Yeah, they're not going to do it right. Yeah. Gerard just made a point that you and I talked about, Henry, in the phone this morning. The Jazz really might have a home court advantage because – they're packing the place in now.
Because there's so many immunizations, David.
they're packing so many people in now. They're going to pack in more. And on the immunization front, just very quickly, someone who I don't know suggested on Twitter that they should send mobile vaccination units to bars. And Dr. Michael Mina, our friend, agreed. I thought that was genius. Lots of bars in Salt Lake City too. I've been there. You have to pay for a liquor license as an individual, but they have it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We need to immunize up people. And then we could have, does LA even, I think LA's got a small group of fans. The Lakers do. So the Lakers and Clippers have a small group. The Jazz will have pretty much a sold out crowd. We'll find out how meaningful that is, but I think it's going to be meaningful. And the Jazz already have the best home record in the league.
It's so crazy that this is the team that like touched off the NBA shutdown. It's like the same one. It's like, yeah, COVID? What's COVID?
But well, just on that subject very quickly, this is why I give Dennis Lindsay credit to be executive of the year. Is I start from March 11th.
Yeah.
Gobert and Donovan were at each other's throats. Like it was public. We all know about it. It wasn't even reporting. It was, everyone was there to see it. And now we fast forward to they've been the best team since week 2.5, at more or less. I think they weren't a top seed for like 5 days when Phoenix had it. They had the first win to first team to 50 wins, and they've had Mitchell and Conley out. And so Dennis and Quinn Snyder too have helped manage that ship. Maybe when Jarrod comes out later, we could ask him about coach of the year, because there's a candidate in New York for sure. Maybe two candidates in New York, one for sure. I want to get his thoughts on that. But Quinn's done a great job in Utah for sure.
The little thing that we're so excited about the play-in tournament and having 20 teams in the mix still. But this weekend kind of ended the idea that there were teams that were going to fight their way in to the play-in tournament. Like the Pelicans are basically done and the Bulls are basically done, which means, right. I mean, do you agree that they're done?
I think you put it perfectly, but I want to keep saying this. I've said this on the show maybe twice, but I want to keep pushing it. I think they need to change the rules for the play-in game. I think we have to do what they did in the Orlando, the Disney games, where if you are a 7 seed, and you are you've reached a certain win total or your X number of games above the 8 seed, you should not be playing the 8. Because if you don't do that, we're going to have a situation where some great team has 53 wins, but the West is just destroying the East, which can happen in a year. And that 53-win team is in 7th place in the West, but the 8th-seeded team has like 45 wins. It's not fair to have one game decide when it's that close, when that's far apart. And so I think it's an easy fix, right? If you can't get above a certain number, then you're stuck. Now, I also think that should be the place for 8, 9, and 10. I don't like playing if 8 seed has 50 wins and 9 seed has 40. What are we doing? I think we're not incentivizing the right way. As it happens, though, we're going to have a hell of the play-in games are going to be fun. I will be watching. Like, they're going to be interesting.
You know, I'm a little unsympathetic, I think, because first of all, 7, 8 seed, you're not winning a title. Period. Done. Not happening. Never happens.
But you might win a round.
Yeah, but you're not winning a title. Like the whole point of the playoffs is to determine the champion ultimately, right? And like you're not. Like, so to me, this is just the 40-50 win team, you know, like I'm sorry. Like, but nevertheless, your season was a little shorter, a little longer than it might have otherwise been. Have you seen the NFL playoffs? Have you seen the World Cup? Have you seen the NCAA tournament? These are much more popular things and they work with really good teams going down all the time, right? Like the randomness of it is what makes it fun, right? Like your mom is not watching a 7-round first round series between like the upstart Magic, right? Like this isn't happening. So to me, like, how do we get your mom to watch? Like make it so the Magic might beat the reigning world champs tonight in one game. Like that might save the sport. Like this as a televised event is like a Seinfeld rerun. Right, like it's.
But the World Cup only has people watching because it's once every 4 years. There ain't no upsets in that event that I'm aware of. The top teams always win. That doesn't mean the number one ranked team always wins. But the 12th ranked team isn't winning the World Cup. It's always the same teams competing for the same championships in that sport. It's just great because they play once every 4 years.
No. Disagree. Like this isn't. This is like economist studies. Like if single elimination sports is vastly better business than not single elimination sports. Like,
oh yeah, I get that, right.
Right, so that's it. That's the whole analysis. Why does the NBA doesn't use the best tool there is to make a sport popular as their sport's becoming problematically unpopular? Like they need to, I think they fucked it up the other way. I think it's the problem they have is it's not single elimination. They got a little cute with it. They got a little scared, right? Like they didn't actually make anybody vulnerable to one big loss, right? If you're the 7 seed, you get 2 shots at it. Like, well, which game, which night do I have to make sure that I stay home and watch? Like, what do I cancel everything for? Like, I don't know. It's a little fuzzy still, right? Like, it's still not like an NFL game where, like, you know, that first oh, Randy, I know, like the first weekend of the NFL playoffs, like you protect your schedule because you have to watch, right? Because good teams are going down, right? That's what happens that weekend. And so I think you actually, as a scheduler, want to create that. You want to make it so that the Jazz might lose. Like, that's the game people want to watch.
So I'm not arguing with you. If the NBA next year said, we're just going to do a 30 team tournament, or pick the number you want, right? That'd be fine with you, right?
I mean, there's an amount of randomness that, the NBA has the worst randomness in major sports.
Correct. Like, it's for reasons we understand. It's only five guys on the court at any one time, and it's best of seven series. So the team with the best player, who's typically on the best teams, has seven games to win four, and so you're getting a lot of randomness out of the way doing that.
Well, also it's a game based on about 100 back and forth, eastwards like a point or two, and so every back and forth is a chance for the better team to be a little better, right? Football is based on the bounce of an oblong ball, and then you get seven fucking points, right? Like,
yeah, right.
Soccer is based on like one guy. Guy called for a penalty and made a penalty, right? Like,
right. One guy, I was going to say, you're right. One guy with a terrible referee who cost my team relegation
right.
with two penalty kick calls, right?
And it's way more popular. Oh, it's ascendant, yeah. right? So, like, random, like, NBA is, like, there's some number, there's some score they use to score how random it is. Like, the NBA score is, like, a 90, and NFL football is, like, a 70. So, like, I'm not saying I want everything to be random, but I'm saying, like, you got to get closer to that 70 number. Or else it's just not, I mean, right now, if you say to a friend, like, this has been true my whole life, like, hey, I have NBA tickets. Do you want to come? They're like, I'm meeting a friend in a bar. Right. But you say, I have NFL tickets or premiership soccer tickets, like, drop everything. Right. Cause those games matter. And in the NBA, like, we worship at the altar of making sure the best team wins, but it's like, what's so great about that? Like, everybody thinks the best team won the World Cup. Everybody thinks the best team won the NFL football. Than Super Bowl, right? Like, it just doesn't matter that much that the best team wins. Like, that's not very important to sports fans. Like, it matters to coaches, right? It matters to players, but like to the business, like, let it be a lot more random. More butts and seats, David. That's like what I'm talking about.
I fear randomness.
All right, moving on. We have so much to talk about. Okay. This is pretty cool. You put together in your head your all NBA team for this year, and then found it's like pretty much the exact same as the Dunks and Threes top five performers. Is that what happened?
Yeah. So I did a radio spot for VSIN on Sirius or whatever they are now this morning. And they asked me, who was my first all NBA, first team all NBA. So I want to talk to you about this too. In my thing, for me, it's availability is a big factor. Like, if you're amazing but haven't been all that available, I just can't include you. If there's somebody who's been close to you, maybe not as good, but has been available. So you reminded me in our talk afterwards, well, that's what Earned Wins is. I even asked you, is that what Earned Wins? Because I wasn't totally sure. Yeah. You said yes. So of course you're right. So yeah, my first team was Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, Luka, Giannis, and Jokic. Because I'm going by positions. And then I looked it up when I was on the phone with you. And those are five of the top six players in earned wins this year. The sixth player who would not be ranked sixth, he ranked second, is Rudy Gobert. He just happens to be behind Jokic. So he is my leader on my second team. But he's a top five player in the league, in my opinion, deserves MVP. He should get a lot of MVP votes. But yeah. Those have been the best players who've also been available long enough to accrue the kind of numbers that they have. And each story individually is pretty incredible. Although I think the most surprising name on that list is actually Giannis, because people are forgetting about him. The two-time MVP winner back-to-back. We all know what Lillard's doing. We'll talk more about him at the end. We all know what Curry's doing. Luka's been in the limelight all year, as is Jokic, who's going to be the MVP. Giannis ran it back to year three, and it's been pretty fucking good. Yeah, he's been very, very good. He just hasn't been as good as Jokic, in my opinion.
This is a weird year. I mean, so you would ordinarily, if I know you, David, you want to put James Harden on this list.
I mean, he's incredible. If you were asking me, okay, we're going to play a seven-game series against the aliens, and everyone is healthy for their age right now. Because in other words, you can't bring Michael Jordan back in his prime. James Harden's on that list. So is Kevin Durant, by the way.
Yeah.
So, and then it's Steph Curry, probably Jokic, and maybe LeBron. I guess LeBron would have to be there too, right? They're the best five players in a vacuum. Right. But that's not the way it worked this year, which is why we talked about Brooklyn on the show today. The Nets are really intriguing because it offends me much more than you offend me with the idea of adding more randomness to my game. I'm kidding about that. It offends me the idea that a team can barely play together and just because they're so amazing can win the title. But if any team could ever have done that, it's probably the Nets. I don't think they will. But it's even that it's possible is quite astounding. That's how good Kyrie, who's had a phenomenal season. He's going to get some votes for all NBA and probably deserve maybe 13. He's also been around more than James and Kevin, I think. Those three guys are so gifted, Henry. And their complementary pieces are interesting and good. And they've got guys that can guard. They just aren't doing it, which is why I don't know they'll put it together. And it won't because of offense. It'll be because of defense at some point in the playoffs. But if they have an amazing first round defensively, we're going to be talking about LeBron's championship team with Cleveland. The first year Ty Lue took over for Blatt, all of a sudden they started guarding and they were suffocating teams. Mm-hmm. If Brooklyn does that, I'll favor them to win the East for sure. But I have a hard time believing they get there. It's hard for me to imagine that.
Yeah. Okay. There was this Jason Quick of The Athletic wrote this story about Phil Beckner texting Damian Lillard. Phil Beckner is his like private trainer. And
coached him in college, right?
Yeah. They went to college together. Let's start working together in college. This is in your wheelhouse. This is the David Thorpe story. I guess I'm not giving anything away by saying that it starts with this NGE. So he's showing little clips of Damian, which is exactly what trainers like Phil Beckner do. And he's texting him NGE, not good enough. And it made a difference. There's a lot going on in this story in your head, I'm sure. So why don't we turn it over to you?
Well, I mean, basically the article is crediting both Damian and I don't call myself a personal coach or a trainer. I'm a performance coach. I was a performance coach even when I was head coach. My job is to increase players' performances. And I help people that are executives. They don't play basketball. I try to help their performances, whatever. So this guy does that, I guess, for a lot of players, including Damian. And there's lots of ways to do that, right? Every player is so different. I was talking to Judy before the show about Ted Lasso, who I watched the first two episodes on a plane. And I haven't seen anything but the first two episodes, but my guess is, this is what his expertise is he gets players to play their best. I'm sure it's a funny way, cute and whatever, but this is what we're supposed to do as performance coaches. And Damian Lillard, having known this guy for a long time, he played for him in college. This guy was an assistant coach, Phil Beckner. He can talk very frankly. And it was one of the things I've noticed I've been lucky enough to coach 80 smart players, whatever, as I've said, not all of them are all-stars. I had my share of all-stars. The better they were, the more they want the truth. Everyone wants the truth. The better they were, the less they care about the Advil candy coating when you give them the medicine. Just give me the medicine. Like, they don't need any sugar coating. Now, some players do. I will tell you just one example. You know, Luol Deng, that dude has been hustled his entire life. He's got no time for the rigmarole that the coaches will do. I watched a player one time, not with him, with another player. I watched a coach from the Houston Rockets, I won't say who it was, who flew here to have lunch with me and a player I've been helping for a long time to show him video of all the threes he had during the season where he barely stepped on the line. Mm-hmm. And it was a very sweet thing. This guy's still coaching now in the NBA. When he left, this player of mine, we were hanging out and I said, could he have just called? Like, you don't have to tell him. He gets it. Like, we understand. Don't fucking step on the line. Which is exactly what I told the player when he was done. Like, you know what? Quit stepping on the fucking line. I've only told you that 150 times all year, right? Give yourself another 18 inches and don't worry about it. So Damian Lillard doesn't need the handy coding. So this guy says not good enough. And then I'm certain, and this is the part that intrigues me, What I know, Henry, is the details in those next messages, which Becker doesn't really talk about. I talked to a player the other day who caught the ball from three, blew by his man, and then missed a pretty tough layup at the rim. A big seven-footer was there to help. And I sent the video to the player, and I broke it down in slow motion, and I said, look at the 18 inches of space between your left hip, he was on the right wing, and the defender is a player that I know that Gerard loves, closed him out, and too high up, and he was waist was high, so this player zoomed by him, but there was 18 inches of space, which allowed the defender to recover and kind of be in the play. I said, if you had gone hip to hip and then immediately cut into his lane like a race car might do, right? I watched Formula One this weekend because of you. A race car goes by, immediately takes that space up. Well, now he's your hostage, which is exactly what we say. And now you can stop abruptly and let him run you over, a la Chris Paul and Luka. Yeah. Or you can just slow down and hostage dribble him and control the action. But because you didn't take that 18 inches, that defender was allowed to influence your game, your shot, and then so was the seven-footer came to help, and you missed the layup. So fans never, I'm guessing the fans don't ever see this kind of stuff. This is my life. It's the 18 inches or the 12 inches or the 4 inches, right? Or I sent another video, this was a few months ago, where a player was contesting this way. If you're looking on the video, right, instead of straight up, that's no good. Mark Jackson doesn't say a lot of things I really like in basketball, but when he says hand down, man down, he ain't wrong.
Right.
You got to get that hand way up. You got to get it early. The statistics show the earlier you get it, the more at least you're thinking. I think Ryan Pinon broke it down. There's like a 4% decrease in the average player shot over the course of a season with the better contest hand up high, right? So this is what Beckner is doing. And I've never coached a player as good as Damian Lillard at that position in my career. So I would love to, because I'm not a stupid coach. So it'd be like a great physicist with a student who is a brilliant physicist. That would be fun to explore physics with those two brains. I got a big brain for basketball. Give me a Damian Lillard, man, Becker is lucky. Because there are things that Damian Lillard is thinking about all the time that the average person or even the above average basketball has never considered once. And the author, I forget who wrote it. Who wrote it, Jason? Jason Quick, right. No surprise. So he did say, I think someone was quoted as saying, like, this is one of Damian's talents, is the lack of ego. But this is how most players are, Henry. You know why? They're the ones on TV, and they're the ones who want to make the money. So, yeah, just give me the truth. Give me all the medicine you can, as much as I can take. Some guys can take more than others, too. Some guys, you just got to give a little dribble at a time. And they'll be a turtle. Some guys can take, they're like computer brains, enormous amounts of information in one sitting, and boom, it's in their game. Guess what? Those guys are the best players in the world, right? No surprise.
So most fans would think, wouldn't it be the team employed coach who would give this kind of insight?
Yeah. So the answer is no, right? The answer is, I think there's pockets of it. I think I don't think every good coach does it for different reasons. It's easiest when you have the best contract. I've said this a lot. If you're a GM and you really believe in your coach, you've got to keep selling it to the team via contract, extension, whatever, or just your language. Because the more players realize this guy ain't leaving and I'm here for 3 or 4 years, the more I'm going to buy into what he has to say. He doesn't have to sugarcoat. It takes time to do all that. He can just deliver the medicine all the time. There's a talent to that. This is what Jude and I were talking about. The ability to impart information to someone, it isn't just the amount of information you're imparting. How much is going to be remembered, right? How good are you as a teacher to remove defenses? And then also, how worried are you that the player is going to react poorly to you? And this is where I think NBA coaches feel a lot of it, is they don't want to be the bearer of bad news, because that player might just turn me off. And now my job is in jeopardy. And so I told this story before, nothing against Bill Laimbeer, but Kurt Rambis was a really terrible coach in Minnesota. And I was going to a number of Timberwolves games. I don't remember why. Why would I go there? Although I do love the city. And there's some great restaurants there. I would go to games and I would watch the timeouts. And Rambis, who basically imitated Phil Jackson at every pre and post game conference, I could hear Phil Jackson, I closed my eyes. He wasn't Phil Jackson. And I remember a couple of times at a timeout, they were meeting and Rambis was clearly trying to sell an idea. And Lambeer, you can't see me if you're not watching, he put his head in the air and just blew the whole thing off. Bill Lambeer, and he's not a dumb coach.
No.
And I thought, this is so much the NBA. He is just going to let Rambis die on the vine. And he did. And he's never come back. And I don't like that. I like coaching staffs that best idea wins. We've talked about this a lot. It's one thing I love working with you and Judy. And the people we have is, like, none of us have egos. You definitely don't have an ego when it comes to this kind of stuff. And you've got a ton of experience and talent. And when I know your talent experience outranks mine, I'm all ears. You know that. I don't argue with you. And when I think you're right, I'm listening and learning. You're the same with me. That's how it's supposed to be. And that's how
I want to learn that Bill Lambeer skill. I want to be like,
He really, back when I did this, we had cell phones, but none of them had the ability to, I mean, I had an old BlackBerry, no camera. I would have loved to videotape it. It was, if my kids did that to me, out the door. I'm not joking. Get out. I may let you back in an hour. I'm not sure. But you are never disrespecting me or your mother like that, ever. And that's exactly what he did. And that happens sometimes. There's the other situation that happens too. And I don't want to name names, and you know why. But I told you this story beforehand. If a player is struggling with his shot, for example, and he goes to an assistant coach and says, hey, I don't feel it. Something's wrong with my shot, whatever. The fear of that player is, well, now it's fourth quarter of the game and it's time for me to get my regular rotation with 7 minutes to play if I'm a starter in the fourth. Is he going to tell the head coach, no, he's not feeling confident. Let's try someone else. Yeah, he might. And so therefore they don't want to tell their coaches that. So the best franchises have helped kind of pave over that dynamic where there could be more vulnerability with each other and more honesty and transparency. But CEOs have performance coaches all the time. Why shouldn't players? Right? We know that to be true.
And it's structurally weird, right? The most important thing the head coach does is determine minutes and touches, right? Yeah. And it's weird to go to that person with like, I'm not sure I'm fully recovered from this injury, or I'm right. A little unsure in my head about like this opponent or whatever, right? You want to go to that person with, I'm ready to destroy the world, right? And so when Damian Lillard pays Phil Beckner, Phil Beckner's on structurally on his team, right?
Right.
And if you're worried, if you want someone to share your vulnerabilities with, it would be that person, not the one who determines your promotions, et cetera,
That's exactly right how you phrased it. And I was listening to a podcast once, and Jeremy Piven is he was a great actor on Entourage. And apparently his mom is like the acting coach in Hollywood, the acting coach, super famous, super talented, and is used to having the world's most famous and talented actors break down lines with her before they do a scene. And illustrious names. That's how it is with everyone. I just read the MVP machine. The best players in baseball are going offsite. What's really interesting in baseball is they're going offsite, where they were going offsite to hire people to break down their hitting, their pitching, whatever. And then Major League Baseball got really smart, started hiring those people because they can afford more than what that player was working on his own, than what that coach was working on its own. But I don't see that too much in the NBA yet. It might happen. It's not happening now. But there's always a search for that independence and that trust. It's hard. It's hard to trust anyone, especially when the people you're trusting can use it against you. Yeah. And that's the fear players have. They're not a trusting sword to begin with because they've been hustled their whole life. Now don't ever forget, most players are amazing at this because they're so experienced at hustling, because they've been hustled. Everyone is trying to tell them, oh, I'm the best thing. I'm the best for you. They've learned how to flip it. And they're just super talented. I listened to an actress talk about the other day how she always had to be a hustler just to get in the front door. Every actor they always say to actors, if they ask, can you ride a bike fast? Yes. Can you speak French? Yes. Can you ride a horse? Yes. Then you figure it out. That's hustling too, right? That's betting on yourself a little bit. But players when they get to the NBA, they're so used to it. man, just tell me the truth. Damian Lillard doesn't need to know. Oh, when you play good defense. Yeah, I know how he did on defense. Well, by the way, he hasn't done a lot of that, by the way, on defense.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Right, right. But he needs to know this just isn't good enough. And then the why. If you don't give him the why, well, now you're 1950s, 60s, 70s basketball coach. Right. They just yelled at you and they didn't tell you how to fix it. That's no good. This guy must do a great job of explaining, well, here's how we do it better. And we haven't talked about this yet, Henry. Damian Lillard has been incredible this season. So actually, it's not NGE, it's GE. Good enough. He got rid of the not good enough. He got rid of the not part, right?
Yeah. You put in the docket, they're the number one offense in the last 15 games.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I also, this document is the more interesting thing to me is not that the Blazers have the number one offense, although it's I didn't know that. It's the Warriors have the number one defense last 15 games, and they have Steph Curry on their team. Who wants to play that team now?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, there we go. That's net rating. The Warriors are number one in net rating last 15 games, but number one in defensive rating with Steph Curry. That's amazing. That just tells you a lot about Steph Curry's greatness, right?
Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah, but look at net rating. So the Bucks are second. The Jazz are third without those two guards. Sixers fourth. But the Wizards are fifth in net rating last 15 games. The Blazers are sixth. The Knicks are seventh, right? The Nets are 11th. Phoenix down to 13. There's going to be some upsets this first round, like we were saying.
There are. Okay. Gerard, Hector, are you available to join us, sir? And then we can talk about bigs in the NBA.
Yes. Yeah, we have to show that video.
You're talking about who in the NBA?
The bigs, the tall people.
Oh, that's my basketball love language. Tall people who can shoot and score. That's my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah. You're not alone. GMs like them too.
Yeah. Yeah. You tend to get employed, those dudes.
We were talking, Henry gave a great name, Gerard, this morning. We were talking about what it takes now, right, to be this amazing NBA player. The two best players in the league this year, in my opinion, earned wins are Gobert and Jokic is number one by a mile. Gobert is 7 foot whatever with 7'6" wingspan and improves so much around the rim and whatever. Jokic is a guard. Embiid has Dirk Nowitzki skills as a shooter. And so Henry was saying, I was saying basically you can't just be 7 foot and agile anymore and make it. And Henry brilliantly said, right, John Kontak doesn't make it now. I said, right, he'd be in Portland, right?
Yeah.
The big guy that isn't an elite athlete, but just solid and doesn't foul all the time, who was beloved in the NBA for a while. That guy's, you have to be so much more skilled now.
Yeah.
And so I said, it's all about evolution, Gerard. It's all about talent improving. And because of our defensive improvement and because the court's got so much bigger, we value athletes that are long and fast and all of that. You've got to do more with the ball. If you're not needed to be guarded, you're not going to help very much. You just have to be more talented. So there's a video, you may have seen it. I had not seen it till recently, of what talent looks like. So this is, to me, Jokic against just a bunch of 7-footers. Let's see if it plays. Watch this cat. There's going to be a whole lot of dudes riding a bike, and then there's this guy. This is Jokic passing the 7-footers. Watch. Woo! There's a guy, he's on one wheel blowing by everybody else. Look how he weaves through everybody. That's Jokic this year.
Well, there's like no room here, but he's like, hold on. Here we go.
I got it. That's, yeah.
This is what Jokic, Embiid, Gobert, the most talented, agile, skilled 7-footers. And obviously Gobert is enough. This is where I think Gobert can get better. He doesn't have the kind of talents around the rim that Embiid and Jokic do, few do, but he can get better. He won't be as good as them. He can get better. He does other things they can't do. The Jazz are going to be good for a long time. Rudy Gobert is really becoming an incredible player.
Yeah, stay tuned. Something about that coming soon, I think. This is like as a coach, you like this, right, David? Like the idea that back in the day when you were tall, coaches forced you to do things just because you were big, right? All right, you get in the post, you do it just because that's just what you do because you're a tall, big person. Now I mean, they're not all great at every level, as you know, but they realize you got to have guard skills, my guy. Like, I need to learn how to dribble, shoot, and do all these other things. And that's the evolution of the game we're seeing, right? I mean, imagine a league where your team is, I mean, and I don't want to regulate the small guy out. I'm not saying that. But if you have a team full of, like, Michael Porter Jr.'s, Kevin Durant's, and Giannis Antetokounmpo's, just long 7'11", 7-foot guys, it's like, I don't know, Amazon basketball. It's crazy. Like,
well, there's a, and I read an article somewhere, I forget where, and I'm basically like, you know, like, oh, the NBA can't make its mind up. Like, a few years ago, bigs aren't cool anymore. Now the MVP is going to be a 7-footer. What's the deal? I'm like, no, I think the deal is pretty clear. I think the deal is you have to have skill, period.
Period.
Right? You have tons of skill, like David's video. And Jokic does, Gobert does. Gobert's in a very special setting too, right? He's on offense, he's in a roster with a coach and a team where, like, he's super effective on offense because he is in this setting, right? Without that kind of stuff, like just being 7 feet tall, not doing it anymore, which is a good thing for us fans. I think, like, I guess people are sad that John Konkak doesn't have a job anymore. I'm not. I'm like,
who are those people? Who are they?
His family.
Yeah, I mean, and it's real. That's a real thing. But there's like a bunch of kind of bully ball minded coaches who are like, we just used to do this a different way, and I'm pissed that we don't do it the same way anymore because it makes me feel less valuable, right? It's like, that's not a real problem, right? Like, just figure out how to make that 7-footer into Giannis, and you're good to go again, right? But it's take simple.
The one thing you said earlier, Henry, that I was so interested in, the NBA always tries to steal from the NFL, but they always steal the wrong things.
Yeah.
The thing to steal, why the NFL is so popular, is scarcity and randomness, right? That's why it's so popular, is those two things. But what's that point where the randomness becomes bad? Because I always go back to the NCAA tournament. Early on, the upsets work. But when the upsets go too long, no one watches Final Fours with George Mason and whoever. No, I got to see Duke or Kansas or whoever. Because funny, you know, George Mason's fun in the first couple rounds. I don't want to see them late. Like, where's like the sort of middle point on that?
There is research on this. Like, I don't, is it true that no one watches George Mason in the Final Four? Like,
besides George Mason alums, but like that tends to like drop when you don't have like, where's Kentucky? Where's Carolina? Where's Duke?
But I mean, there, I remember that first year Gonzaga went really deep. It was like the whole nation just got so excited, right? I feel like there's like a, like people do like Cinderella stories. I don't know, but
Gonzaga had a long track record though. George Mason didn't. Yeah. Gonzaga had been around there for a decade. Yeah,
but I don't think like teams don't have very big built-in audiences.
Yeah.
So it's not the game of winning national and global TV ratings is not about like the people from Uruguay watching the Uruguay team in the World Cup. It's about Uruguay just blowing minds with some highlights in the early rounds. Just make you just, you know, Joe fan in Pittsburgh will now watch Uruguay, right? Like that's what we're looking for. So that's how you get big audiences. So to me, like the game of, you know, the Lakers have a pretty big following. The Warriors, but like that's kind of
that's it.
A very short list, right? So to me, like that's not, or actually the worst is the Raptors don't have a U.S. audience, like math, you know, like and so, but you can get people to watch the Raptors if they're really exciting. How do you get them exciting? Well, like, you know, I think you make them not play 20 exciting, kind of exciting games that make them play like 3 and then it's lodged in everybody's imagination, right? It's like,
do you like to draw the idea of, let me ask both of you in 2 minutes, how would you change the playoffs to make it, to get more people to watch? How would you change it, guys?
The best of 5 was always fun in the first round, like, cause that produced upsets, right? Everyone remembers the Nugget and all that's fun. I mean, the thing that's going to change the playoffs, I think, is changing the whole regular season, right? Eliminate regular season games, chop that from, you know, 82 to 60 or 58, whatever the number is. Like, those things are going to make it more relevant. But when I've got to, I mean, I always get this, is we're the ones stuck in it because we love basketball. We're crazy people. The regular person out there on the street corner who's like, I don't got time for this shit. How do I get them to focus? I got to make it scarce. That'll make them watch it more.
Yeah, we need all those players I listed, those amazing Zion Williamson, LeBron James type players who are out. Like, we need to get them here, like, not just in uniform, but murdering people, like jumping as high as they jump all year, running as fast as they jump all year at this time of year, right? That's how you make the playoffs more exciting. I'm like, that draws exactly right to me. Like, they need to play once or twice a week up till now, right?
I would like to see, get rid of the All-Star game, give the guys a week off in the middle of the season, and then to kick off the second half of the season, do a 30-team tournament in one location where everyone can watch each other's games.
Ooh, and no Fight Island. Anymore. Fight Island.
And pay, right, Fight Island, and pay them a ton of money. So they're, it doesn't count on their record. It is just for bucks, and you could donate from the charity. Yeah. And these guys will, for money, everyone will be playing their ass off. Right. And then we'll start, and then give another week off, then go for round two.
All right, we got to go. Let's just see. Eagles all over your ass, David. You're in trouble.
And Monty Williams starts here.
We'll talk about Friday, Gerard.
Okay.
We'll do our awards on Friday.